Welcome, 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 welcome. This is the Living Triggered Life podcast with Keith Maskell.
And Roxanne Maskell.
This is our first time recording and our first session. We'll be coming to you weekly at the same time. And the show will approximately be about half an hour or so, just so you guys will know that. Today, we'll be talking about the why. Why is it called Living a Triggered Life? You'll be hearing a little bit more about what we do, what this podcast will be about. So I will start out and tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Keith Maskell. I'm an actor, Screen Actors Guild, Actors Equity, full-time actor, social impact artist, and male survivor of sexual abuse, and got involved in a project called Triggered, which is a story about a male by the name of Malik, who's reflecting on his, looking at his past and trying to understand the abuse, but also looking towards the future to what will happen to him, so to speak. And that, just that story alone struck a chord in me. And I grabbed my wife, Roxanne, and we decided, we've been looking for a project to use art as a social tool for social workers and other folks, and felt like this was the project for us to work on. So I got started with that, but I've always been passionate about young people. I've always been passionate about issues and projects that can provoke thought and laughter, but also for change and make people think. And I felt like this project was something that was powerful, but also gave me a platform to be able to, as a survivor, talk about my story. So that kind of what has led me to doing this podcast. But I will let Roxanne talk a little bit. What do you got to say, Rox?
So I'm Roxanne. And
hi, Roxanne.
Hi, Keith. And I'm a licensed social worker. This is like super strange. I've never done a podcast before, so you got to forgive me. I'm still trying to figure it out.
I mean, you talk all the damn time. Like, I don't understand what the problem is.
I do. I know I talk all the damn time, but this is like so different for me. But
all right, just talk.
We'll see.
Just talk.
So let me start again. I'm a licensed social worker, clinical social worker, and I have been doing social work for a really long time.
How long, Roxanne?
20 plus years.
Dang, that's a lot.
But I just got my credentials not too long ago. You know how that is, chasing the paper. So I love working on these kinds of projects because I really am committed to ensuring that social workers sort of learn how to interact with clients with different issues, coming from different backgrounds from them sometimes. And you don't always get that training. So this is really important for me in my mind because I always want to give back to my community, which is communities of color, black and brown, but also to my community of social workers, and ensuring that they have what they need to help support people in the community who are looking for therapy. So I've worked with families, I've worked with kids, I've worked in domestic violence, I work with young people, college age, worked with a lot of parents in my time, I'm with various issues, and also worked in healthcare. So I have sort of a vast experience, I would say. Do I have to say anything else?
No, you said a lot. You said a lot. Did you go to school?
Yes, I graduated from Simmons College, which is now Simmons University, with my master's degree in social work.
And what else?
What do you mean, what else? What other college education do I have?
You have more than one master's, I think.
I do have another master's from UMass Boston in a human service administration with a concentration in nonprofit management.
Mm-hmm. And where'd you grow up?
Now I'm being interviewed. I grew up in New York. I identify as a New Rican, which for some people who don't know is a Puerto Rican that grew up in New York. There's a different sort of identity to that, different feel, different kind of Puerto Rican. And I came to Massachusetts maybe about 20 years ago and ended up staying here because I met this boy, man, child, some time ago, and I ended up staying here and didn't go back home. But, yeah, that's me.
And what do you think drew you to social work? Why?
I've always watched my mother be the person that people who speak Spanish go to because they were always dealing with people in a hospital setting that didn't speak the language. Mm. And they always needed help sort of understanding how to navigate systems and understand how to get other needs met other than their healthcare, but was impacting their health. And my mother was always that go-to person for a lot of people who came to, you know, a city hospital. So I watched that for a long time, never really understood what it was. And then one day I went to the symposium for social workers. And while I was there, I started to realize that, wow, these are my people. This is cool. I like this. And then I saw a table for Simmons. And that's where it all started. Like, I just was like clear. That was about maybe 6 years ago now. I was just clear. I want to be a social worker. I didn't know that's what my mother was doing, even though she's not a trained social worker, but that's what she was doing. She was doing that community social work. So that's my story, how I got to where I am. I finally figured out what I want to be when I grow up.
Would you call yourself a clinician?
Yeah, I mean, we use a lot of terms in social work, clinician, therapist. Sometimes it depends on what kind of social work you practice, which sometimes determines what or how you identify yourself. But generally, sometimes I use clinician, but generally I use social worker.
But I think, are they two different things?
So they can be. The two sort of distinguishers in my mind is clinicians tend to provide individual therapy, if you will, or group therapy. And social workers, they do the same thing. They provide therapy, but they also include the case management piece and how you help people access services and resources. But to me, they're interchangeable terms. But again, like I said, it all depends on sort of where you're practicing your work. That really kind of defines what your clinical identifier is.
I think I have to just be honest, is that when people say social worker, there's, you know, people automatically think you got 50 cases, you're working for child welfare, and that's it. You're an ongoing social worker, you know, ongoing case manager or whatever, and there's only just one level to that. And so I think that's just how people kind of think about it in terms of social work that way. Even in terms of everything that you do, I'm not sure if there is one word that actually describes all of your skills and how you use them.
Well, to be honest, that all depends on who you're talking to and what people's experience is, to be honest.
Well, if we look at when you tell people what you do for work, and people are like, oh, man, that's a hard job. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like, they only say that when you start to tell them what your actual work is.
Yeah, but most of the time, there isn't, like, people don't want to ask you, like, questions about that. You know what I mean? It's not like people, and then you're like, oh, no, or, you know, like, oh, no, I'm a therapist. you know, I'm a clinician. People are like, oh, you're a clinician. Okay, so what do you, so what is your specialty? You tell people you're a social worker, it's like, flat line. No one wants to hear anything else.
It all depends. They might ask, it's not even specialty. They might, because we don't really consider ourselves specialty. I think it's more of a niche. It's a niche. I mean, I guess that could be a specialty, but that's, but social workers do all kinds of different things.
Right. Well, see, that's what's right. Well, but things,
awesome
right.
about social
well, exactly.
workers.
But for the most part, nobody knows that. They only know the one job. They only know the one job. And that is the grind, 100 cases.
100 cases. Now you're exaggerating.
I mean, all right, 25 cases for one person. You're going to make visits at people's houses. You know what I mean? And that's it.
I understand that, but generally, I understand where you're coming from, what you're saying, but generally, let's, you know, just to keep it basic, social workers really are the glue in a lot of situations, and they don't, they're not valued to be the glue in a lot of different situations, but we keep a lot of our societal issues and concerns and worries, we keep things together. People just don't. It's, social workers are misunderstood as to what their role is.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that has a lot to do with our experiences are so vast. Like you can work in healthcare, you can work in child protection, you can work in a nursing home, you can work in, you know, just providing therapy for kids and parents.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's just so many things that social workers could do. We're trained across a spectrum right. of issues,
right.
but we're really the glue.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just, like you said, I just don't think, I don't think people see that. I think there needs to be like Love and Social Work.
Mm-mm.
If there was like no. on VH1 and stuff like that, so people could actually really see what happens.
You're silly.
You know what I mean? Yeah, someone who works for child welfare or someone who works as a therapist at a school. You know what I mean? Then people would have a better sense of what social workers do and how they can use their skills in a different way. You know what I mean? Think about that. That'd
I do,
be dope.
I do know what you mean. I think the issue is that people who are psychiatrists and psychologists, because they have the doctorate, the PhDs,
well,
they're the ones that get all the credit for what happens. But the reality is even those folks couldn't do what they do without social workers.
Well, I mean, I think what's interesting as well is that social workers, of course, can practice, you know, and do therapy and stuff like that. And I don't think, like I said, I don't think a lot of folks actually, you know that, you know, the fact that you have the credentials, like you said. What are the credentials?
Well, so it's a hustle, right? So a lot of people have, you can, there's varying levels of credentials for social workers.
Mm-hmm.
The lowest is a LSWA, which is a licensed social worker associate, lowest level.
That sounds really low, by the way.
Well, it is. I mean, sounds you don't low. Have to have a master's degree to have sounds that licensure. Low. But
not like that means anything because it doesn't.
No, it really doesn't. It doesn't mean anything. But let's mm-hmm. be clear about something. Licensure is professionalizing people. Is professionalizing an industry or a profession that really came from grassroots.
Right.
People on the ground doing community action, organizing. Those right. are social workers.
Right.
You don't need credentials to do that. You need street cred.
Mm.
You need to know you need to understand what's going on in your community. You need to understand what it's like to take the bus in your community and what you don't have access to.
Mm.
That's the bottom line.
Wow.
But those folks, you know, they can get these credentials.
Right.
But, you know, it's a hustle and we have to be clear that everything's a hustle. Everything's about money.
Right.
But the reality is, what do you bring into it?
Wow, that street cred is crazy.
It is. I mean, you got to know.
Is that the difference between being chased out of somebody's house or not? street cred.
No, your ass will be chased all the time. you trying to do something that they don't want you to do.
So this is a
you might get cut. So
it's a little bit different street cred though.
Well, I guess the difference is it's exclusive. Mm-hmm. So that's the lowest, and then the highest right. is a licensed independent social worker, which is we call it LI. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm after.
Right.
But that's basically where the cheddar is. Mm. I mean, hold on.
There may be some people that don't understand what cheddar is. The cheddar is the dinero, the money, the cheddar, the bag. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? The bag.
Access to different positions that mm-hmm. have, you know, you get more money. I mean, right now I'm at LCSW, which is a licensed clinical social worker. So I have a lot of space to do a lot of different things, mm-hmm. but I can only work under somebody else's licensure. Somebody mm-hmm. who has an LI. So right. that's where I'm at. I'm getting my hours. Right. But the reality is that we have a lot of social workers. My mother was a social worker, never been trained. Mm. But she was doing social work.
Right.
All 42 years of her life.
Right.
The community, the people in that community knew who was the person. Mm. And they would go and they would ask for what they need, and she would do her best to figure out how to get them access to what they needed so right. that their children were healthy, they mm-hmm. were healthy. That's just the bottom line.
Right.
And that's glue. Mm. Nothing else. So I guess nothing else matters to me. I want to be the glue.
Right.
That's what I like being. So what I like about social work is that you can work in any kind of population.
Right.
Because some of the ethics and values are all the same across the board.
Right.
You start with where people are at.
Yeah. I think that's incredibly important. And it's something that more people don't necessarily do, is really being able to meet people where they're at and then rise together. You know what I mean? Not trying to bring people down, not trying to talk down to people or anything like that. Meet people where they are, and then we rise together, which is incredible. So with that said, what spoke to you about the Triggered Project? Actually started with the Red Monster, which was a short movie. What spoke to you about the project?
So the fact that there aren't many spaces for Black and Brown men to speak their truth mm-hmm. and to talk about what they've experienced in a setting where it's not about judgment and it's just about the person
right.
and about what they experienced.
Right.
And creating that space for other people to feel comfortable to talk about what happened to them.
Right.
And what's different about the Trigger Project versus, you know, the Me Too movement, which I don't have any qualms about that. I support right. equally. What's different, though, is that the Trigger Project really focuses on how you bring people together mm-hmm. as a community. And what I mean by that is it's not run by gender. It's not run by color. Mm-hmm. It's just basic. What happened to you? Mm-hmm. And how has that impacted your life? And how many opportunities do you have to be in a community where it happened to other people, mm-hmm. but then there's also people who are there to be supportive,
right.
like social workers, clinicians, right. psychologists, so
right.
on. And it's just it's freeing, and it really speaks to what my beliefs and my ideals are,
mm-hmm.
which is really about, you know, like I don't subscribe to feminism.
Mm-hmm.
I subscribe to womanism mm-hmm. because it includes men and women.
Mujerista?
Mujerista.
Did I say my Spanish, my Puerto Rican accent okay?
That actually was the best that
really?
I heard for you.
Wow, I'm really impressed. My Puerto Ricans and my family would be really proud of me right now.
Mm,
even though I'm Bayesian, but I have Puerto Ricans in my family.
But it brings together what is real about Black and Brown communities
mm-hmm.
is being together. The togetherness is what's important
wow.
to me.
Right. Right, right, right. And for those folks who just tuned in, this is Living a Triggered Life podcast. My name is Keith Maskell. I have my partner in crime here, Roxanne Maskell. And we are you know, the first couple of sessions, you guys are going to get to know us a little bit. And so I'm interviewing Roxanne. You guys can just kind of get to know her and hear all the brilliant things that she has to say, because she is brilliant. And just so you know, the Triggered Project, www.triggeredone.com is the website. Triggered is a story of two men, Malik and Keith, both looking back at their lives, talking about their experiences of being sexually abused, trying to, as they have grown into men, how they've processed that, and then looking towards the future. We got a grant from the Boston Foundation. Thank you so much. Two grants to be able to develop this piece. And we are now taking the conversation. Taking the conversation national, so to speak. That's what's the kind of sparked this podcast. Being a survivor, being in a relationship, Roxanne and I wanted to talk about what it's like to live a triggered life, to acknowledge the fact of what has happened in the past, and to seek positive relationships with loved ones, of course, which is difficult, family, but also just us in general and how we've kind of dealt with it. So that's what this podcast will be about. We'll have guests. We'll talk to people. You hear about Roxanne and I's relationship in some ways. And, you know, we're going to have some fun.
So is it, so just so that people know, is it Triggered One, the number one, or Triggered ONE.com?
Always keeping me in line. www.triggeredone.com. Did y'all like that?
Simple question.
I had to put a little hip hop in there for my hip hop heads that are out there. TriggeredOne.com. You can follow us on Twitter. Of course, yes, we do have Twitter. Triggered112 on Instagram. Triggered_ONE_. That's how you can follow us. And Facebook at Triggered1ONE. That's how you find us. We're here talking to Roxanne Maskell.
Keith Maskell.
Triggered Project.
So can I just say something about this podcast that I wanted to sort of introduce that I didn't say?
I mean, there's nobody else here but me and you, so like...
I don't have to ask permission?
No, you don't have to necessarily ask permission. I mean, okay. I mean, we kind of run this. Like, it's me and you, so...
All right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I just want to say something about why it's called Living a Triggered Life.
That'd be awesome, Roxanne. Thank you so much. You're the bomb.
So Keith already talked about identifying that he's a survivor.
Thanks.
And the social work thing is to say, you know, we all survivors of complex trauma. That's the bottom line. You know what I'm saying? But I also am a survivor, and you know, we have a story that we'll sort of uncover through this podcast. It's not all going to happen at once. But living a triggered life is really a way to talk about that we continue to feel triggered and be triggered throughout our lives. Mm-hmm. And how we manage that is what makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And so what you...
I like that.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. So what you will see, at least in the stage production of Triggered, which is also a piece of all of this.
Is Triggered a one-man show?
It's a one-man show.
Oh, okay.
That stars Keith Maskell. But one of the things that's really important to understand about living a triggered life is that being triggered, it sort of never goes away. It's always there in some fashion or form.
Right.
It just looks different over time as you evolve, as you grow, as your relationships grow. But that's what's important to understand, is that we once triggered, you always going to be triggered.
Right. Acknowledgement is important. It's so funny how, you know, you could work in, I do some work with full-time actor, but I do some work in schools and things like that. And so the kids have picked up on it, you know, the bud word. Oh, I feel triggered. Can I go to the nurse?
Like that language.
The way you're talking to me. Yo, the way you're talking to me right now. Yo, you got me mad triggered. You know what? I need to talk to the nurse. I'm out. like, wow. You know, like who you been talking to? Who you been talking to? Y'all know how to you get yourself another way to get yourself out of class is talking about that you've been triggered. You know what I mean? And what can folks say? You know, and there's so many folks that it happens to all the time. Emotional outbursts out of the blue. You look at people like, dang, what's wrong with them? Something happened. Something happened that sparked a memory, that sparked something for emotional outburst. You know, it happens. You know, it happens all the time. And I think trying to figure out what those things are, or trying to be in a relationship where someone can kind of tell you about it as you do your work, your self work.
There's a lot of steps to it.
It's a lot of steps to it.
A lot of steps to it.
A lot of steps.
Yeah. So that it doesn't impact your life in a way that you're not able to function.
It's a daily battle. That's the realness of it. It's a daily battle. I know that, you know, I feel like, you know, 15 years ago that I should have been, you know, trying to work on myself a lot more, even though I was doing the best I could, no question, but there was definitely another level that I could have got to, you know, with kind of seeking therapy and things like that. But that's a process within yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you know, in our communities, and even as men, you know, supposed to be tough and whatever. And so what does that mean? What does that mean for me if I need help that way? And who am I going to ask? And who am I going to talk to?
And where are you going to go?
And where am I going to go?
And being triggered or having certain experiences in your life, when you add a long-term relationship like ours, that's a lot. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is like, I always talk about it, like this is Black love in real life and living color. And that's what we're talking about, living a triggered life. Like we're talking about our Black love and living that triggered life. And how we don't allow being triggered to deteriorate or destroy our marriage, basically.
I'm married to you?
Oh, you didn't know that?
Oh, my fault. My bad.
Get your life.
We jumped that broom, y'all. We jumped it. No, I think that's important. That is just so important. And I don't think, and the thing about it is people like to give advice and whatever. We feel like we're just another couple that's trying to figure it out every single day. We're not experts in about a lot of things. But we do feel like sharing is important. Incredibly important, not just for the, you know, doing this just because it's connected to the project or whatever, just because it's something that we've always talked about. I call myself a ghetto therapist.
You're talking about the podcast or something else?
I'm talking about the podcast.
Okay.
We're talking about the podcast. We're talking about doing, you know, at one point we talked about, wow, we should work with couples and stuff like that. But I've been known as a ghetto therapist. Dum, 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 dum. You know what I mean? Someone that people just always talk to and just start telling stories.
Hoodology.
You know
what I mean? Hoodology.
Right, hoodology. You know, I just put out like just 5 cents.
Making up words.
I do it like the Peanuts old style, 5 cents. Hook me up. You know, but I think also too, because my mom was a big hairdresser and things like that. So, you know, I cut hair and things, you know, a little hobby.
But one of I just want to get back. One of the things about why this podcast is important, I think, to me,
yeah,
is that both being survivors, living those triggered lives, it has an impact on our relationship. We're really not meant to have lasted as long as we have.
No, No, you were supposed to meant to like mess this up a long time ago.
Y'all can't see me, but straight side eye right now. Woo. And man. that's what's important to talk about, because this has been a process.
So you don't think that we were supposed to last?
No, I think there's a lot of people around us that, when and if they find out that this is the deal, like, it's a lot of people around us don't.
Oh, our they friend, have no idea.
They don't know.
They have no idea.
And I don't regularly disclose.
Right.
So
thank you, by the way. Oh. Thank you.
No, that's all right. That's what this is about.
Right.
So I don't really disclose my history, mm-hmm. but, you know, I'm an incest survivor, basically.
Right.
But I don't really disclose my history. People have no idea
right.
how much this is a huge part of our marriage and mm-hmm. our relationship
right.
and the things that go down sometimes that we have to work through.
Right.
And my hope is that we're going to be able to give people listening to this podcast some hope
right.
and some ideas about how to really start processing what's happened to them in their lives
right.
and how much impact that's having
right.
on their relationships.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because that's where you get, when you start feeling isolated and you've been triggered, that's when you just feel total hopelessness.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. And we were just having, you know, had some really great conversations today with a couple people and things like that, and really trying to process folks are really trying to process, you know, a relationship and their role in it and things like that. But the one thing that was not there, one thing that wasn't necessarily talked about until, you know, we kind of asked some questions, was what happened to them as a child? How did that affect them in the relationship? And I think that's a really hard process to grapple and to come.
You mean in an intimate partner relationship?
Yes. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah, especially as men.
When we grow up, that's how we learn
right.
how to be in relationship with mm-hmm. other people.
Right.
Like, that's everything. We just right. don't, we need help recognizing what it is.
Right.
Like, what we learned as values of relationships or what we learned as values of men and women.
Right.
But that all gets poured into what you do. We just don't.
Right.
We don't utilize therapy that much, so we don't have no one to process that with.
Right. And who's going to tell us? You know, and sometimes the people that are raising us or have had their own trauma, which they don't tell us about to protect us, or is it protect them? To protect us, or is it protect them?
I don't even know if it's protection. Survival. You could describe it as that, mm-hmm. but a lot of people don't believe in talking about what happened to them because they're not sure what's going to happen and they're afraid of falling apart. As if falling apart is something to be afraid of.
Well, I mean, I could be a keep it 100. Sometimes you're not sure if you want to speak what the truth is because you're not sure what's going to happen after. There's such a fear of actually trying to face the hardest thing that you've ever had to face because you're not sure what else is going to come with it. You don't know if you're going to fall apart, if you're going to, the fear is whether or not you can get it back together and keep it moving, right?
But the strength is actually actually the best thing to do because you're not letting it live in your body.
Yeah, but here's the thing, but also too, but let's think about it like this, but then who's going to help you? Who's going to help you try to put it all back together? That's the hardest thing.
Sometimes that's when you find out who are the people.
I mean, it's and most of the time there's not anybody there. It's a tough risk. It's a tough risk in some ways to allow yourself to just like crumble like some Play-Doh, like someone squish you like some Play-Doh. You know what I'm saying?
I guess I'm just super hopeful because I feel like
it's all about support. It's all about support.
But I feel like there are so many different things that help us be resilient as Black and Brown people that even if you crumble, that's just the beginning of your rising up.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. There's no question about that. And people find, you know, people find their way to survive. People find their way back up. But having that support definitely makes.
No, agree.
And finding the right support, which is the other thing that's incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
incredibly difficult to find that support to be like, okay, I got my folks. So wait,
you're talking about therapy.
I'm gonna fall apart right now.
You're talking about therapy
and other type of supports, people, family, like, you know, because sometimes your family can help you out in a lot of different ways. Sometimes faith can help you out in a lot of ways, give you the structure.
So what helped you?
And stuff like that. I'm cute.
Next.
I'm not cute?
I mean, that's irrelevant to the conversation.
I'm just asking the question. Am I cute? Can I ask that question? Am I cute?
I think you know how I'm going to answer that question.
You see how it is, right? I can't even get a cute. You see how stuff's in the way of the relationship? I can't even get a cute.
No, right now you're not getting it. You get it other times.
You see, y'all? You see the narrative that I'm painting of her?
Whatever. What helped you?
What helped me what?
Get to the place that you're at.
What
was the support for you?
You, number one, I thought that was great. One, also being forced into a situation where it was a mirror to how much work I needed to do. I think that was an incredibly not helpful situation, but also helpful. And I think that I was lucky enough to find a really dope therapist.
How did you find that therapist?
Well, here's how I found a therapist. I went to this woman by the name of Roxanne, right? And I said, yo, Rox. She said, yo, Keith. You need to get you behind in therapy. And I was like, yeah, all right. So she made a phone call, right? Because I had to ask for help. And sometimes that's the most hardest thing to do. She'd been telling me or whatever. I had to ask. I said, all right, I need help. She made the call, called the insurance company or whatever. And then luckily, is that what happened?
No.
What happened? See, that's the whole thing. That was a setup, y'all. Y'all didn't realize that. That was a relationship setup. Like, she asked the question knowing that she knew the answer and I wasn't going to tell the story right, which doesn't happen very often. So tell the story.
So you did get forced into a situation where you were crumbling, basically, before my eyes. But I didn't know you were crumbling. And then you told me enough for me to realize that you were falling apart. But at that point, there was nothing I could do. I was sort of powerless in the situation. So the only thing I could think of was, how do I get this dude into some therapy? How do I find him a black man, male therapist? Because I feel like that's what would be helpful. Do you know how hard it is to find a black male therapist? It's not easy. It's like a needle in a haystack.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no question.
I was in therapy, so I asked my therapist, who was old school therapist in the community, and knew about this one guy. And so we worked to try to make sure that he could accept our insurance and so on.
We'll call him EW. That's what we're going to call
EW. But that was after months of trying to convince
EW.
Keith of going to, you need to go to therapy EW. Because I, like, this ain't working for us at this point. You're falling apart in front of me. So it took a while.
That's what happened?
Yes.
I know. Sometimes I'm not sure what, you know, there's different versions of things or whatever. But okay, I'm a rock with you. I'm a rock with you.
That's my perspective.
I'm a rock with you, though.
But we're going to tease this out. It's not going to be today. But
I'm a rock with you, though. I'm a rock with you.
The quick story is, finally got you to that therapist. And I could feel, hear the difference in you.
But I had to go.
It was really hard finding this dude.
I mean, the thing about it is, it was very difficult. And the thing about it is, you know, I am a proud Bajan with Puerto Ricans in this family. But, you know, Weston, I am Barbados. Big shout out to Barbados. All the Bajans, stand up. Got to say that. But, you know, I mean, still in Bajan culture, West Indian culture, what's wrong with you? You gonna tell people your business? Well, you gonna go and sit in the room like something wrong with you? Like, that was, you know, that's kind of what it was. You know what I mean? My people should have been in therapy since when they came out the womb here. But, you know, that didn't necessarily happen. So, it was difficult. You know, I had to just actually say to myself that I needed it, you know? And, you know, I also was really incredibly scared because I wasn't sure what was going to come out. Was I, really talk about the abuse, talk about the things that I needed to talk about. I didn't know what was coming else with it. I don't know what else.
What got you there? If you're that scared, what got you there?
I had to step up. It wasn't about me. It was about you. It was about us. That's what it was about. There was, when it was a choice and it was like, you know, man, if I don't do this, like I need to do this. I need to do this for us. I need to do it for me and take care of myself. And taking care of myself is taking care of her. And taking care of us. That's what I had to realize. I always knew it. I always tried to put her first and put our relationship first and whatever. But when my issues really started getting in the way, I had to make a decision. You know, do I choose? I got to choose me. And choosing me and being responsible for myself and my care and my mental stability and things like that was the best thing that I could have done to take care of us and to take care of her. And I think that's something that gets lost. You know, it gets lost in relationships. That's not even anything that's been a dialogue. We've talked about it. She's responsible for herself and her being and mental being and whatever. And I'm responsible for myself. We can, of course, we need help. We ask. There's no question about it. It's not like we're both on an island or we don't support each other. But, you know, knowing that I'm responsible for myself that way. And thinking about that and the responsibility that I have to myself and also to her, it's kind of a duality thing, really just made a huge difference with it. And it definitely felt like it definitely made me a better man, a better person. But to be able to sit across from someone who understood Bayesian culture and things like that, but also was a little
talking
bit
talking about EW.
Yeah, EW.
Right now, not
EW,
me.
EW. Big shout out to EW. Thank you so much. You're the man. EW. But being able to sit across from somebody and with no judgment, not someone who was just, you know, sitting there and staring at the wall or whatever, but was actually engaged in the conversation and stuff like that, was a big deal that would actually react and things. And I feel like that's
called validation, yo.
That's what called it is?
Yeah, because it means that somebody sees you, somebody hears you,
yes.
Somebody can give you back feedback,
yes.
You know, validate your existence,
right.
Validate that you're not all the things that you think you
can. You validate,
are what?
Can you validate that I'm cute? Strike two. Keep going.
Now that you interrupted me.
I'm sorry, excuse me.
But that's validation, you know. That's simple validations. And sometimes that's what a therapist can do. Just right. Be sitting there and acknowledging your existence, acknowledging right. What you went through.
Right.
And keeping it basic and simple.
Right.
I call it the dump truck. When I talk to people about therapy, I'm like, let's envision this as a dump truck.
Mm-hmm.
You got a whole bunch of stuff, junk, in your truck. All you need to
do... Junk in your truck?
Yes, I said.
Junk in your truck? Junk
yes,
in your truck?
That's what I said.
Okay. I mean, you got to explain that because, I mean,
well,
we got some people out here.
You got stuff in, you got bags, you got all kinds of stuff inside your truck. And therapy to me is about how do you put that dump truck in reverse and dump?
Mm. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I always talk about it when the first time I went to, you know, the therapy, I went to the intake person and I beat that behind. That's how I always talk about it. Cause I was just slapping her across the face with issues and stories. You know what I'm saying?
Like, and this happened to me
right,
and then this happened
right, exactly.
And then that happened.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like I would just hit, like I was like, just hit. I was just like, I had a bat and I was just hitting her across the face with everything. And you could see her eyes being like, what? And what happened? And what else? You know what I mean? And that was like an hour and a half. You know, it was like diarrhea. It was like diarrhea of the mouth. No, diarrhea of the abuse, I guess. And so that's how I thought about it. I was like, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm just going to get it out. Because I don't know what's going to happen next time.
The intake
or whatever.
Is- The intake is just about her. Trying to figure out kind of therapist you're looking for. What are some of the issues? Because sometimes some of us specialize in certain issues.
Right. Yeah, she didn't specialize in black men. I'm going to tell you that.
No, she specialized in being able to take the information and moving it along.
I think she was scarred.
Ran over her with the truck. She was
scarred. I think I scarred her for real.
Well, I mean, but let's
she might have wrote a book about
it. But here's a reality about this.
Yes.
How many black men you think come in and do an intake at that place? The place that we're talking about.
Oh,
which is a really hard environment to go to because everybody's in different stages.
I was in case study.
You know.
No, there's no question about it. Like, you know, you walking in and you're sitting around and people are looking at you like, do people know I got issues?
Well, and then some people are sitting there looking like they have issues. Let's be honest about this.
No question. There was a couple of folks who were medicated. No question.
So then you feel like, I don't think this is the right place. So then you have somebody smoking cigarettes after cigarette after cigarette.
Right.
Talking to everybody in the waiting room. Or, do we really need the sound effects? Or they're sitting there just staring at you in this very odd way. Mm-hmm. Like, it's an uncomfortable space.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. I remember I think that I felt so uncomfortable. I had the anxiety that I just took it out on the intake person.
I think you did.
And I'm okay with that.
But also you were a virgin, so. Therapy virgin.
So let me just be clear with the choice words that you've used so far or phrases. So junk in the trunk and virgin. So I just want to point that out.
I'm sorry. I can't help myself.
Just want to point that out. Is that a New York thing? A New York thing?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So do you speak Spanish?
Yes.
Oh.
Why is that important?
I just thought if some people may, you know, just want to know if you speak Spanish at all and stuff like that.
Oh.
You know what I mean? I thought that might be in something important.
Oh.
And people may want to know whether or not you speak Spanish.
Oh.
For those people who are just joining us, you are listening to Living a Triggered Life podcast with Keith and
Roxanne
Maskell. This has been great, Roxanne. Thank you so much for coming and agreeing to do this, for being actually our first guest. For the podcast. I think that was pretty pretty excellent, pretty awesome. That you were able to share your thoughts about your work, why Triggered, a little bit about the Triggered Project as well. I think folks hopefully folks will want to come back and listen to us some more. We plan to keep doing this. I don't know if we have a choice to stop, but we're going to keep going. We're going to keep rocking. Keep trying to tell stories. Keep trying to get people to tell their stories and be validated and also give resources as well. Website is www.triggered1, as in the number 1.com. We do have a resource page as well for folks who want to get help.
Or folks who want to give us their information to get referrals.
Exactly. We're located. We do this out of Boston, Massachusetts. But we definitely are worldwide. That was my attempt at some special effects. But we're really excited and very happy and humbled for this opportunity to be able to bring this podcast to you. And hopefully y'all will listen. I mean, hopefully y'all will listen. I mean, that's what I got. You know. Roxanne.
Yes, Keith.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, I'm good.
I mean, you talked for almost an hour, so there's nothing wrong with that. I talked almost a half an hour, I should say.
Well, you know, I get warmed up.
That's right, girl. Warm it up.
Engine's revving.
Uh-oh. I'm in trouble. So I talk about engines being revved up.
It's warm.
Does it purr?
That's a private conversation, sir.
Wow, really? After dump truck, virgin, now you talk about private. You know what I'm saying? You disclose. Really, now you're closing it up now? That's what's up?
Yeah, we're wrapping up the show here.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Y'all see what it is. Yo, this is real. This is 100% real. No question. But if anybody wants to produce Love and Social Work, hit me up. Because we can get it done. I think it would be incredibly fascinating. I think, you know, we can get more people of color involved in it and things like that. Or, you know, or actually loving therapists. I think it would be really great. Big shout out to Taraji P. Henson, who's really has a great new foundation and is really trying to get more folks of color into the field. It's incredible. You know, and she's talked about her struggles and things to be able to find a therapist as well. And that's one thing we'll be talking about too. We're going to talk about the process that people can go through to find a therapist. Now, that therapy is, you know, sometimes not for everybody and things like that. It's a hard thing to be able to do. But it's important to know how to do it and when you decide if that's something for you. I think that's just important.
And there's more types of therapy than just talk.
Correct. And that's important. That's important.
People don't know that.
Right. And we're going to have a show where we're going to talk about different types of therapy and things like that. I'm an artist and things, and being an actor, not to use my art as a therapy, but it is something that can be very therapeutic. But thank you guys so much for listening in to Living a Triggered Life podcast with Keith and Roxanne Maskell. And we will see you all next time. Remember, thriving is better than surviving. We out, y'all.
Ashe.
Ashe. So we got 2 minutes, so we can just talk. What you think?
Interesting.
It's so crazy, right? Because it's so crazy. I could be a radio host. No question.
Oh, you got the voice for it, but the ums, man. Are you going to listen to this? I'm going to count how many ums you did.
It's on the radio. It's okay. You can do ums.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, some people do them a lot. I mean, if you give me a signal and you go like this or something and tell me about ums, then I'll stop.
Okay.
Then I'll do it like this. I'll stop. And then I'll say something.
Well, what happens?
And then I'll get a rhythm.
Talk all the time. The ums causes you to pause and...
Yeah, when I get my thoughts, but I can control it, you know, and do it more in this style.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just talk like that, which really just makes everything smooth. Everything's so smooth. Okay?
Yeah. We're good?
Mm-hmm. I think we're good. And I think that most definitely, I think that most definitely helped with getting your feet wet.
Yeah.
And kind of what?
Is that stuff so you'll be able to use some of this?
Oh, yeah. You better believe it. We'll be able to. I mean, I have to figure out how, you know, who I'm going to get to cut it up for me and stuff or whatever, because I don't think I should do it myself. But yeah. There's stuff there that we can most definitely use. For sure.